The next item up, our lead, will be John Tokorzuk. Are you ready, John?
I am, thank you.
All right, go for it.
Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Hirsch, we are interested in sharing how department leadership will, through collective action and shared engagement, integrate and realize the plan's interests across the agency and begin translation of this roadmap into action. To that end, we are joined today by the division chiefs from private forest, state forest, fire, administration, and partnership and planning, each of whom will be speaking to the plan and the intersections across the agency and connection back to the goals and the interests therein. Following the opportunity to speak, we would request to hear from the board your questions and ideas about additional ways in which we might be able to further the plan and advance the goals. With that, I will turn it over to Josh Bernard, Acting Division Chief of Private Forest.
Great, thank you, John. Good afternoon, Chair Kelly, members of the board, and State Forester Hirsch. I'm Josh Bernard, Interim Division Chief for the Private Forest Division. First, I wanted to note that myself and others in the division were able to review and provide input on early drafts of the Climate Change and Carbon Plan, and that we support the vision provided by the draft document. Second, specific to private forest program, I wanted to walk through the practices that are already underway or soon will be regarding climate change and carbon. I'll start with the Urban and Community Forestry Program, which offers incentives, training opportunities, and on-site technical assistance to help cities improve their urban forest management. The program administers and promotes Arbor Day Foundation recognition programs, which contains ways to recognize climate-forward approaches. The program has purchased and is promoting the use of a statewide tree mapping and inventory software that can assist city staff in responding to climate change-related weather extremes and invasive insects. The program is also a charter partner with the fledgling Oregon Urban Wood Network, which is seeking ways to recognize, identify, and utilize trees and logs removed from urban forests and promote ways to keep the carbon stored in the urban wood products. The Urban and Community Forestry Program and Oregon Community Trees are looking for ways to increase the engagement of low-income, marginalized communities in tree planting. Program staff and some Oregon community tree directors have participated in environmental justice training. Efforts are currently underway in translating our most used brochures into Spanish and offering conference scholarships preferentially to cities with the highest Black, Indigenous, and people of color populations. Relative to the Forest Practices Act, the draft document notes integration of climate change in the Forest Practices Act rule revision process. This would take place as we conduct future rule analysis under our existing processes in statute where possible resource conflict or degradation is identified and further rule analysis is needed. On reforestation and afforestation, the J.E. Schroeder Seed Orchard has been supporting tree improvement efforts in the Pacific Northwest for many years, making improved seed available to state and large industrial landowners. Over time, the zones for which seed can be used has expanded due to the tree improvement efforts. The seed orchard continues to participate in tree improvement and is currently engaged in third cycle selective breeding for hemlock and Douglas fir, which includes samples planted in the wild to test performance. Each cycle of tree improvement is expected to result in growth gains and be more ecologically resilient by introducing a wider range of elite characteristics. Tree seed currently being deployed that is sourced from the seed orchard is mostly from first-generation breeding efforts, with the bulk of second-generation seed 8 to 10 years out for deployment, and third-generation seed being about 15 years out. Also, it is important to note that through the Oregon Seed Bank program, family forest landowners have access to the latest selections. Looking ahead, we will soon be developing a statewide plan for reforestation following the 2020 wildfires. An additional challenge and opportunity for reforestation is considering climate change and resilience for future disturbance. Given the wide range of climates across the burned areas in Oregon, we will be looking for ways to integrate climate adaptation strategies into reforestation plans. Key elements of such a plan would include priority landscapes, watershed health and drinking water, climate change and adaptation, disturbance-resilient forests, and critical social interactions. The draft document also notes climate-smart forestry incentives on private forest land, which includes a note about a climate-smart recognition program. I think as the next step, we as the division can work towards establishing a program for landowners slash operators this biennium who practice climate-smart forestry, thinking of something similar to the process for Operator of the Year program, but using the goals in the draft climate change and carbon plan. And with that, that's kind of a summary of private forest practices currently. I'll now turn it over to my colleague, Liz Dent.
Great. Thanks, Josh. Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board, for the record, my name is Liz Dent, and I serve as the State Forest Division Chief. Really appreciate the opportunity to visit with y'all on the climate change and carbon plan, and specifically as it relates to state forests. Before I begin, I want to acknowledge the indigenous people as original stewards of the land since time immemorial. We're managing and conserving forests throughout Oregon within the traditional homelands of many of the 9 recognized tribes. So as we craft policies and approaches to manage and conserve state forests, we're looking to the tribes for guidance on how best to align our goals and strategies in ways that honor their relationships to the lands that we manage, protect their heritage, and build and maintain pathways into the future for their continued cultural and traditional uses of these lands. So we've been actively engaging with the tribes, striving to provide a genuine and meaningful seat at the table, recognizing them as sovereign nations, each holding unique perspectives, histories, cultures, and traditions. So the importance of relationships with tribes is identified in the CCP, so it's important for us to engage the tribes as we work on the topics of climate change and carbon. So as has already been stated today, the CCCP provides the values and intent statements for the department, and then it also articulates the goals for state forests, which is articulated as to lead by example and demonstrate climate-informed forest management on state forests to achieve greatest permanent value. So as we work on the forest management plan and the habitat conservation plan, this stated goal can be codified into the forest management plan, establishing climate smart forestry as a means to achieve greatest permanent value. There are a couple different draft policies in play right now. So there's, that will be rolled up and brought to you in November. So one includes draft guiding principle, and related to carbon and climate change, and it is stated as the forest management plan will be implemented to adapt to climate change and mitigate its impacts on the management of state forest lands. And the FMP will also contribute to climate change mitigation and sequester carbon. We're also working on draft goals for the forest management plan. Those have been under development for a couple of months, and we've been engaged in a public process to get input and feedback. We've been working with our county partners as well. And so the plan, again, is to come to the Board of Forestry in November with that material rolled up so we can seek your input and direction on those policies moving forward. Then the forest management plan strategies would flow from those basic goals and guiding principles. So there's been quite a conversation this morning about how do we define climate smart forestry. The key principles being forest adaptation, climate mitigation, and acknowledging the social dimensions of climate change and carbon sequestration. And really all of those are at play with how we currently manage our forests, and certainly see this as a moment in time to improve on that and build on that. And I would argue that that's really codified in our greatest permanent value statutes and rules that call for us to manage our forests sustainably, providing a range of goals, including economic, social, and environmental goals, which help support rural communities and provide ecosystem services, as well as connecting Oregonians to the outdoors. The CCCP highlights several supporting actions from state forests. I'll just touch on those quickly. And again, there's been a lot of conversation around the first one, which is to slowly extend harvest rotations to increase storage, carbon storage, while maintaining the flow of wood fiber. This, of course, relates to the climate smart forestry concept around mitigation. So just an example of how we see this as an opportunity to optimize carbon sequestration while accomplishing our other goals of greatest permanent value. Larger and older trees benefit species that are dependent on that forest structure. It has benefits related to carbon storage, and it produces large, durable wood products such as dimensional lumber. In addition, just as a reminder, timber harvest from state forests is not exported, so it truly supports Oregon jobs and rural communities. The second one is to identify areas that are particularly susceptible to the deleterious effects of climate change. So again, a mitigation element of climate smart forestry. Examples would include wetlands, streams, high elevation lakes, areas of the forest that are currently in poor health and vulnerable to hotter and drier climate. In that conversation, we've often talked about areas in our Tillamook State Forest that are negatively impacted right now from Swiss kneelcast, and then we've also seen recent damage from the heat dome this past summer. A third deals with the aspects of community forests and operationalizing those concepts in management of state forests. This acknowledges the social dimension of climate smart forestry. I would argue that we're accomplishing that currently largely through our local relationships at the district level, working closely with neighbors and stakeholders, counties, communities, and tribes. Again, I want to emphasize that there's always room for improvement, and I think this supporting action is a perfect example of that. The fourth is about resilient forests, and so this falls into the restoration category and mitigating component of climate smart forestry. So these areas can be managed and conserved with a goal to restore ecosystem services, which also includes carbon sequestration. This action, again, tends to call out Swiss kneelcast areas that have slowed or actually ceased any measurable growth. So their benefits for carbon sequestration are minimal. And then the fifth one is to identify areas that have high carbon storage potential, especially those that can also provide benefits to threatened and endangered species. So the Habitat Conservation Plan provides a good opportunity for that, particularly with the strategies associated with the habitat conservation areas and the riparian conservation areas. And finally, identify and operationalize carbon storage in harvest operations. And so there's elements of this described as looking for alternatives to burning slash. Some of those would be leaving the debris on the forest floor after harvest. There's also some interest in looking at biomass and biochar. And I think this is an area that would really benefit from more research and monitoring to understand sort of the benefits and costs of those approaches. And so with that, I will turn it over to Doug.
Good afternoon, Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Hirsch. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for the Department of Forestry. Similar to my colleagues, I've enjoyed the opportunity to be on the front end of this document and influence the writing. This has been a great partnership in the department to think holistically about our climate change and carbon plan. And a significant portion of this and the testimony we heard earlier was targeted towards increasing wildfire condition in Oregon's landscape. And the stated goal for fire readiness and response on page 18 is to modernize Oregon's complete and coordinated wildfire protection system to respond to the increased severity in wildfire, and also to promote fire and smoke adapted communities in the wildland urban interface and beyond to mitigate the impacts of climate induced increases in wildfire severity. And the department and the board and the legislature and the governor's office really have patented on this conversation for several years and recognized the challenges before us in Oregon. And I'm proud to say we're very much in line and on a pathway to effect change and align efforts consistent with this plan moving forward. And that's really embodied in the work of the Governor's Wildfire Council a couple years ago that was completed, and then really was executed with the approval of the agency's budget in 21-23 budget, which included Senate Bill 762, which largely incorporated the recommendations from that council's work. So as we think about that council's work and the implementation of climate change and carbon plan, I look to page 28 and beyond, and you'll see many of the themes and the supporting actions that relate to advancing fire protection systems for Oregon. And they're all under the tenets of the National Cohesive Strategy, which has three tenets and really define the foundation of the council's work and the work that culminated with the agency's budget and passage of 762 addressing these issues. It begins with adequate response, and I'll speak specifically a few components there that you'll see across many of the supporting actions starting on page 29 of the report. Move to fire-adapted communities. I'll speak to a few of those highlights, and you certainly heard one this morning in the wildland-urban interface definition. And then close with resilient landscapes. Investments in Oregon's protection system across all of those tenets, and it has to be successful to really mitigate the challenge we have before us, consistent with how this plan also lays it out. For adequate response, the department has seen an increase in capacity for adequate response at the aviation level, and we discussed many of those severity resources this morning and how they played a critical role already in the 2021 fire season. With close to 1,300 hours flown, keeping fires small, minimizing costs, and minimizing loss. We also spoke this morning on advanced leadership made available through those investments and identified in the plan relative to adequate response. And that included fire line leadership on the seasonal capacity for our firefighters. There's a recognition that fire seasons are longer than they have been in the decades prior. So that investment by the state is being realized this year with those investments. So adequate response also, I would highlight, includes language in Senate Bill 762 that was passed relating to baseline standards of protection to ensure protection standards across all lands in the state of Oregon. And the department will play a critical role in partnership with the state fire marshal to establish standards of protection in areas where that is not established across the state. Again, on the first tenet of the cohesive strategy related to adequate response. The second tenet of the cohesive strategy and consistent with this plan is the fire-adapted communities. And we spoke a fair bit this morning relative to that work, consistent with the board and advancing wildland urban interface definitions, and then the concurrent wildfire risk mapping that is really required to define the wildland urban interface and the risk we face, so we can target our assets in the highest priority uses. The final tenet of the cohesive strategy is the resilient landscapes, and we see in this plan and in the investments from the legislature into the agency's budget, along with the passage of 762, specifically for fire protection, I'd speak to the advancing the prescribed fire program, establishing that program officially within law, and adequately resourcing that program. This is the third Rules Advisory Committee that we've established through the Board of Forestry to establish, support resilient landscapes and mitigate the catastrophic risk of wildfire. A little bit more detail on resilient landscapes will be expanded, my colleagues, as we move towards partnership planning program. With that, I would emphasize that all these programs and projects identified from page 28 forward and under the goal on page 18 specific to fire, you'll see in the board's work plan as we transition aspirational thinking about advancing fire protection, which we've worked through the board on several agency initiatives over the last several years, to implementation. And I'm really proud that that's where we're at as a state and as an organization, and under the leadership of the board, we have very tangible projects currently in place now, advancements and investments in the protection system to mitigate catastrophic risk of fire consistent with the climate change and carbon plan, and looking forward to continued efforts on that. With that, I'll turn to Bill for the next presentation.
Thank you, Doug. Once again, good afternoon, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board. For the record, my name is Bill Herber, Deputy Director for Administration. So administration has a unique nexus to the goals in the plan. As Danny noted earlier, the governor released Executive Order 2004 in March 10, 2020. This executive order put administrative branch in motion due to its outlining greenhouse gas emission reduction goals and directing the department to begin reducing those emissions. We've been undertaking efforts along those lines in several of our administrative programs, focusing on energy reduction and efficiencies in areas such as facilities, motor pool, and information technology. Along these lines, the administrative branch supports all goals within the CCCP by its inherent mission of supporting the department's operations, both directly and indirectly. Those direct support areas are, like I mentioned, vehicles, where we're exploring opportunities to utilize zero-emission vehicles in charging infrastructure in our various needs, such as our core work in the field, fire suppression, and standard vehicle usage. In fact, EV charging infrastructure installation is beginning within a week or two here on the Salem campus. And then within facilities, we explored LEED certification and utilize ENERGY STAR rated materials in both new and existing construction, and we take pride in focusing our work on sustainable facilities management across the enterprise. Indirectly, we would continue to support the vision of the CCCP by applying this climate smart lens to how we approach all aspects of our service channels, including procurement and contracting, diversity, equity, and inclusion, of which we got a position in human resources this biennium, and through administration's role in department planning processes such as board work plans, budget preparation, and strategic planning, ensuring that this perspective is always in play. Ultimately, as Brenda mentioned, admin is well suited to fully understand our department's footprint through all our operations and ultimately reduce or help reduce that footprint through operational changes and or efficiencies. Administration looks forward to assisting in all of these efforts. I will now hand it over to Jeff Burns with Partnership and Planning Program.
Thank you, Bill. Chair Kelly, members of the board, Acting State Forester Hirsch. For the record, my name is Jeff Burns with the Partnership and Planning Program, and I would like to discuss with you today the role that Partnership and Planning has played historically in the context of the climate and carbon plan. And I would reiterate perhaps all of the my prior colleagues from divisions and programs in speaking to their particular aspects, but that would be awfully boring. I would just be repeating them. So I would say that the Partnership and Planning Program in particular is in a unique circumstance where we support and facilitate each one of these divisions and programs. And for example, the Urban and Community Forestry Program specifically, we take the opportunity to work with our federal partners to facilitate both planning and funding, a funding source to help fill out that program to affect change within our urban communities and communities of color and underserved to address heat islands and water runoff and the things that Josh alluded to earlier. We also help facilitate and promote the Western State Fire Manager Grant Program with our Fire Protection Division in creating safe communities, fire-adapted communities, and assisting mitigation efforts on the ground in the wildland-urban interface. That is historically the position that the Partnership and Planning Program has been in, to facilitate and to support. The department has taken a really unique and progressive view of how we participate that is unique across the nation, in that we are now operationalizing our program to a point that really can affect change on a broader scale. And that is not just tracking and facilitating agreements and federal funding, but is also providing outreach and operationalizing to some degree new programs with the context of shared stewardship and a very progressive lens from this plan informing how we do business across the landscape at a landscape scale. And a couple of examples of that that Doug specifically referenced is SB 762. And we are not only participating, but really leading the charge in wildfire response and mitigation within our communities in high priority landscapes. And we are also building out and continuing the good work of our federal forest restoration program, which includes our Good Neighbor Authority and other tools to work on federal lands. And so as we really look at the broader context of where partnership and planning fits in the larger scheme of things, we are moving, like I say, more into an operational role that really can affect change across the landscape, which just by that very work really can and will be informed and influenced by our DEI staff and our carbon and climate plan. And as we move forward into these new programs and projects across the state, we are looking forward to building that out with new partners in a sense of shared stewardship and reaching constituents that we have not reached in the past, and also continuing to facilitate and support our divisions and programs, but building out new and exciting ways of doing business as well. So I'll leave it at that with our partnership and planning program. And if there are questions or want to wrap up with anything, John, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. And thank you to everyone else for your comments, your support, and your engagement in the process here today and in the development of the plan as we move forward. At this point, I would like to push back to the board and ask for questions and input, and I will turn it to Robin to provide that facilitation in terms of that conversation.